The next one will be private members legislative proposal, which was done by Honorable Lapmon. Without any waste of time, can we allow Mr. Salmon to lead us with the report on our Russian trip? We will do the edition because I'm told that the members did not forward any additions or subtractions to the support staff between Mr. Matonzi and Mr. Salmon. So we'll give over to our researcher, Mr. Salmon, to take us through the report, and then we will discuss it and adopt the report. We need to adopt the report today. And then after that, we will deal with the members' interest legislative proposal. Over to you, Mr. Salmon.
Good morning, members. Given that I haven't gotten any feedback on the Russia report, I'm just going to go through it. I'm not going to go ad nauseum. The brief of the report is about 16 pages long. Since I've given you a version, we've gone through our own administrative processes, which have fixed up some of the grammatical and other kinds of errors. So I'm just that won't be the focus here. The focus will be just on the content. So if I can briefly go through it. From the 16th to the 26th of March 2012, the Portfolio Committee undertook a trip to Russia. The delegation consisted of 8 members. The purpose of the...
Hosted us, giving us a special
between our chairperson, Honorable Monier, and Honorable Lechuskin. Said that basically it emerged that both countries have serious considerations of that the issue of migration is quite a heated topic at the moment. And so it's one of the issues that came quite prominent during the elections. But as much as there's tension within the country, there's also the need for importing human capital. So there's these contentious dual purposes. basically, they also said that they had a significant percentage of migrants in the country, approaching about 10%. This is actually quite similar to some of the estimates about how many migrants there are in South Africa, although Russia seems to have far better statistics than we do. Basically just a demographic outline of how many migrants there are in the country. There was an overview of the legislation which Russia uses to administer its migration. They have a complex set of laws they're kind of all interrelated in a kind of complex manner. But they basically just gave us a run-through of what the procedures were, and members were noting which of those things were of relevant to us and which were not. So I didn't go into, I just gave an overview of what procedures they use without going into which of those procedures any particular member might enjoy or not, or would recommend for the country or not. An interesting thing was that Russia keeps track of all its refugees using biometric system, something South Africa is also considering. They also are able to identify where all migrants are at any given time, and that a person needs to register with the local branch of the immigration or the federal migration service in each place that they're living, and then if they leave, they need to inform that same branch and then re-register with the place that they're arriving to. So apart from illegal migrants that are not registered, they have a fair idea of where any given migrant is in the country at a given time. Then a lot of the regulations are quite similar in terms of marrying foreigners and getting local citizenship status. One thing we did remove from the original report was 4.7 in the version that you have, because I just felt that it was a bit contentious. And that was good to do with seeking legal status for illegal immigrants, it was stated more formally elsewhere, so we left that out. The first country, the first safe country of asylum principle does not apply in the Russian Federation. So this is one thing that South Africa is considering that Russia hasn't adopted. I think it's because of the state they're quite keen on attracting foreign migrants, particularly skilled migrants, and those are often not neighboring countries. Then we go on into the meeting of the deputy chairperson of the State Duma, Mr. Vorobyev. Russia is very complex. They have 83 regions, and given the broad expanse of the country, it's quite impressive how they're still able to manage migration relatively well. But he also indicated that the country was on a similar trajectory as South Africa, in the sense that they were also only more or less 2 decades into their new democracy, after the fall of the Iron Curtain. So that we were on similar trajectories, but that we'd chosen different paths, which has affected our migration regime. They also indicated that they were very interested in establishing by the Russian parties, that they also wanted to investigate having kind of exemption agreements between the two countries to make it easier for Russians to travel into the country, and thereby encourage Russian investment in the country, as they felt that the current procedures were a bit of an obstacle in terms of Russians coming into the country. They gave us a couple of good examples of regional integration. The former Soviet states, of which there are 16 in the surrounding countries around Russia, they have a good agreement with these countries, and they have a free trade agreement, also something that South Africa is considering. So they give a good example of how they have good relations with these neighboring countries. They then also indicated what their policy was in terms of attracting scarce skills. One good example was they actually set up particular like development hubs, such as academic development hubs and scientific development hubs, where they had special arrangements for migrants coming in and relaxed requirements in terms of attracting those persons to come in, stay and contribute to the development of those special hubs or special regions. They also have a staged migration policy coordination. So if we go into this, we're now in section 6.2. They just outline some of the requirements that Russia has. One of the things that they have that we don't have much of is that that migrants coming into the country have to have a full health check, particularly those that are staying for a longer period. This for them is an additional security consideration, which might not necessarily work for South Africa. They also have issues with that they're trying to mend in terms of integration of migrants into their society, and one of the conditions that they're trying to integrate is requiring migrants to learn the Russian language, and so that they're able to better integrate into our society. And then they have various programs on how they deal with that. They also, the Federal Migration Service has actually formalized agreements with church organizations and NGOs, including Muslim organizations, in terms of assisting migrants and migrants in the country as well. This is something that South Africa could also consider. Given that we have more, that the Department of Home Affairs and Immigration Service have more informal connections with these NGOs. I'm just trying to like breathe. Or I'm just trying to highlight some of the main issues. I don't want to go through it word for word. They are also considering tightening their legislation. If you go into 6.3, in terms of the reception of asylum seekers, they at present accept all. Refugees in terms of the 1951 UN Convention and its 1967 Protocol, but they also have a presidential decree where persons who have special humanitarian claims to be in the country can make presidential decrees and be recognized as asylum seekers or as special humanitarian status. And then it just goes into some of the demographics of the Russian Federation, what their migration profile is like. Not that it's necessarily going to impact on our policy decisions here. The very fruitful interaction was then in if you go into section 7, is the interaction with the director of the Federal Migration Service. showed how the various security document options that Russia has to provide these services for international or international clients, including governments and the private sector. That Russia has also said that they'd signed several visa exemption agreements, including an exemption agreement for diplomatic and official passport holders in South Africa. So that was a good platform they felt for extending that to all travelers, particularly they thought in terms of education, encouraging cultural exchange, academic exchange. That they also said that they were in the process of finalizing the visa exemption agreement with the US. So the platform is good for such relations to kind of be extended to South Africa. Their immigration systems are quite impressive. Something that could work for us here is that their database, the immigration database, has records of all the specific features of that migrant, their age, their gender, their criminal records, if any, and their level of education, the kind of details we don't currently have in our immigration system. But with the new immigration system, there is actually the possibility to do that. It's just a question of adding an additional field. So I think in terms of using the skills of migrants, that could be a useful thing to consider for the country. Let's see. Yeah, then they just gave us a presentation of how exactly their immigration system and their refugee system works. They're also signatories to much of the same international protocols as we are, such as the Human Rights, the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, the Convention Against Torture, the Refugee Convention we've already mentioned. So that's just an overview of the. Yeah, so in addition, like I said, they in addition to refugee status, they also have a special political asylum, which is something that's granted by decree of the president, which is something he also delegates, something we also have informally in our Immigration Act, but it's not really used. So I think, yeah, that's pretty much all it is. What we then concluded, if I can just go to the conclusion at the end, was that that the Russian Federation was a hands-on example of ongoing process and evolving structures that are needed to manage migration in an ever-changing and dynamic world. But that they take a more risk-based approach to migration policy. And this means, obviously, a more state security orientation as opposed to a more humanitarian orientation towards migration policy, which is one of the trajectories, one of the directions that South Africa is considering. And that there were benefits and disadvantages of such an approach, which the members would have noticed in their interactions. But also that if South Africa is to develop migration policy, it needs to have broad considerations such as security, economic development, globalization, trade, tourism, investment, education, and labor, amongst other things. There was also an additional lesson learned that the movement of persons between the member states of BRICS is likely to be a critical factor for consideration in our policy, as this partnership and related investments are going to develop in the future. The lessons learned from the Russian tour provided a broadening of perspective as well as examples of best practice in migration policy that will prove invaluable to me. members involved in South Africa, as South Africa moves towards formulating its more comprehensive overarching migration policy in the coming year. So yeah, so that's the brief overview. If members wish to engage, add, subtract, head it up for you, Chairperson.
Thank you. That was the brief or the document as prepared by Mr. Sal regarding our Russian troops. Members would add, subtract. I notice Honorable Kam, Honorable McIntosh.
Thank you, Jay. As far as the content is concerned, I don't have much of a problem, but it is a pity that we don't have that amended version that has corrected the formulations and stuff like that, because there are quite a few mistakes in this report I have. So it's difficult for me to, you know, to say that we can actually accept the report where there are, you know, these kinds of problems. The first thing is, I would on the first page definitely take out that whole story about, you know, not visiting the ports of entry and what. I think the report should be on what we did in fact do, and not on that whole explanation there. It's really, you know, almost takes up half of the introduction, and I think that should just be taken out. Then there are. Yeah, there are. I don't even know whether I should go through all of these, because there are lots of formulation errors and stuff like that. Yeah, but also other things, like, for example, on page 2, 3.1, you know, Russia is a big country. What, you know, what is meant by that? Is it geographically big, or is it economically powerful, or what? And there are a number of these kinds of you know, examples. 3.2 as well was a big issue. I would rather say a major issue or something like that. The language in itself is also a bit problematic. Yeah, there. Then 3.3 is excellent. The Empower urges the committee that when it amends the immigration legislation, yeah, I don't know, that one is fine. You know, on page 4, for example, that last paragraph, the first safe country of asylum principle, it does not apply. I mean, that is not correct formulation. For example, I'm just there are many others, but I'm just pointing out here and there. 5.3, you talk of the Duma state instead of the state Duma. And then I think that, and there are other examples as well. I'm not going to point out everything now. When we get to page 11, I think that there, with the conclusions and observations and so on, we must, you know, use that also to make certain recommendations. For example, when it comes to 9.1, we have to decide whether we're going to recommend that we have a similar system in South Africa, for example, and some of these others as well. The visa. The question of not having visitors' visa requirements between the countries and so on, that must be a very specific recommendation that we make, I think. And also the one of cooperation between Parliament and the State Duma, we must say in the report we, you know, hereby recommend that the Speaker, you know, takes this matter up. 9.5, for example, again, formulation problematic. Foreigners who open small shops in Russia have to ensure that the person who works in the shop is a Russian citizen. the owner cannot work at the shop. Now, who is the owner?
Well, what if the owner is now, you know,
mm-hmm.
What does that mean? I don't know.
Yeah.
And yeah, there are other examples, as I say.
Mm-hmm.
9.7, it is relatively easy to acquire permits to legally enter
mm-hmm.
in the country, particularly for short
mm-hmm.
periods. Enter in the country, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, what do you mean
that, 9.7. Then, conclusion, last paragraph, on page 12, the Russian Federation offered a hands-on example. What is that? You know, so I'm a bit uncomfortable in accepting it, you know, in its current format, although I think the issues have been captured correctly and the content in terms of that is fine. But we will have to, you know, have a cleaned up report. And as I said, when we get to the end of the report, we must make specific recommendations, and there are specific recommendations we can actually make. Next.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Sorry.
Thank you, Madam Chair. On the trip, I think first of all, I'd like in this committee to pay tribute to Mr. Matonzi and to Mr. Salmon for great help, and I don't know who was behind the scenes helping our committee clerk, but the arrangements were good. I know they were done at the last minute, and I don't know whether many people slept in the committee section in our department a few days before the trip, but I do want to thank them, and on the trip they were so helpful and kind and made sure we got everywhere. So I do want to say thank you very much for all of that, and also to you, Madam Chair, even though you weren't feeling well on one or two days, and I know it was very cold and a shock. We thank you for that. I also share Honourable Gowan's concerns about the English, and look, I'm very conscious that English is my first language. Honourable Gow, it isn't his, but certainly our committee section in Parliament, I think, produce, generally speaking, excellent documents, good English. I mean, it's world class. So, and there are quite a lot of little errors, and I don't want to seem pedantic or schoolmasterish, but I think one can go through this and pick them up, and I think Honourable Gow has picked them up. And I'll mention one or two, and I do agree with what Honourable Gow said. I think there is one thing which I just haven't picked it up, but one of the things which was very interesting in the presentation on the Russian Migration Service, I think it was the last meeting, is that they can produce a map of the 83 regions, and it's a, so you know, obviously GIS type thing, and it tells you exactly what's happening in each regional province, and I think that should be mentioned in the report. Then, Madam Chair, look, there are some very clumsy sentences, or some people describe them as inelegant in their structure. And I mean, like, Russia has a big tourism potential to South Africa on page 2. I mean, what they mean is that there's a big tourist potential for South Africa to attract Russian tourists. But, I mean, it's just the structure. And I don't, as I said, I don't want to seem pedantic. But there is one, Mr. Rafika Duma, State Duma, but on page 7, under 6.3.1, I think instead of accented, I think what is meant is the Russian Federation assented to the 1951 UN and its convention, not convection. Had something to do with air conditioning. There are a few little mistakes, but that's quite an important one, I think, to correct. Madam Chair, there are about 5 or 6 other, like on 9.4, it is easier for refugees to obtain Russian citizenship than elsewhere. is that, I think they mean than anywhere else. Now, I think that needs to be defined. Is that anywhere else in the world? In other words, to go to Russia, you get refugee status, chomp chomp. I think, well, it's implied, a lot of their problems are a bit like our problems, is South Africa has, since the day of our gold mines and diamond mines, been a magnet for people from adjoining territories. So people have been coming from next door for 150 years. But now, because things are more relaxed, you've got this big influx. Now, the Russians are sitting with the same problem. They were part of the Soviets. So you have this huge Russian-speaking population. Many of them are no longer in Russia. But obviously it's easy. They understand Russian. So it's a natural place for them to come. And we in a sense, have a similar situation. And then 9.6, the Russian Federation has developed an asylum seekers policy which includes, and so on, and also at the top where it could be not being able to apply, but scope to apply for is perhaps a bit easier. And then there's a sentence here which I can't quite work out on the last page, page 13, that says, at the same time, the movement of persons and so on. That sentence needs to be recrafted. But no, it's a fine report otherwise, Matt. I think it covers the main things. It just needs a little bit of panel beating, and mostly on the English structures and so on.
Thank you, Jay. I just wanted to add one or two things. I think the one issue that's important to capture is the involvement of the region in tracking foreign nationals within the state of within Russia. I think that is a point we need to make, and you know, we can consider whether maybe in our case the province so we need to make sure we pick up on all these pertinent, important issues. The second thing is, you know, the whole dispensation they have for people who work there, who actually come from the former Soviet states, that whole dispensation, how it works and so on, you know, on what basis they get the work permit, and I think they have to report somewhere and pay tax or something like that. You know, there's a small amount of $330 a month. That issue, we need to capture that issue. That's a very interesting issue because it deals with the pressures in terms of economic migrants, actually, and how they deal with it. It's very relevant for South Africa. And thirdly, the point is actually that Russia do not have a refugee problem. The numbers that they mentioned to us and so on are very few refugee cases that they actually have, and so on. And we should ask ourselves, you know, why is that the case, and you know, how whether we know how they actually deal with these matters to make it possible that it's not that much of a problem. I think there is a bit of an issue in the sense that neither Adam nor Eddie were present when we met with that head of the Federal Immigration Authority. And I think, if I remember correctly, that point actually came up in that meeting. We also engaged with them on, you know, how do they deal with refugees and so on. And he basically said to us, but you know, you must deal with it in this and this and that way, and then you won't have a problem. We don't have a problem in that regard. It's not supposed to be a problem. I can't exactly remember what he said, unfortunately, but so maybe that's a little problem. But so I think we should be, and that then also that will assist us that can make very pertinent recommendations. That will have an impact, if accepted, you know, on our system and our view.
Yeah, as you know, what the honorable communist has spoken to economic migrants, Yeah, we have this thing that after 5 years you are applying for citizenship. But there, even after 5 years, the person cannot apply for citizenship. He or she goes back to his or her country. That is the agreement between the neighboring country. And if I remember well, honorable members will remind me with regard to citizens, Russian citizens marrying foreigners. I remember it was said that they take up to 7 years to be Russian citizens after marriage. You don't just become a Russian citizen after getting married to a Russian
citizen. I've heard 3 years.
I think you know that maybe I'm making a mistake. Also mentioned in our document. And as for the IT system, I think if we had a system like that, we wouldn't be having problems of space. You know, as to who is where, how many do we have from Ghana, how many do we have from whatever country. If we had a system like the Russians, they do have a good system of tracking where people are. They actually showed us where South Africans are and how many are they and how many permits were issued to South Africans and how many are still in process. So I think we will not adopt the report today. It still needs to be worked on.
Thank you, Chairman. I think as the report has been done, there should be a comparison kind of a table which thinks in terms of taking policy, this is what we have in South Africa, this is what the Russians have. And all these other things, so that we are able to easily compare what we are having and what the Russians are having, whether it's negative or positive, or it's something that we can copy, or it's something that we need to refine further to our situation here at home. I think the other thing has been mentioned in terms of the recommendations as well. Because as the research has been done, then one can be able to say, if this is what has been done in Russia, what are the other countries that you maybe just choose some few countries and check whether if there was such a system and it is not working and what are the failures, or it is working and what makes it strong. So that as we really take something into consideration, we have a view of what kind of a system we are putting ourselves in. I think that is basically what I want to say. But there was a point on 9.10, which was page 12, I think. Paragraph 9.10 would be the point of what I want to say. But it says during engagement between the delegation and Russian officials, the request was made to extend exemption to individuals traveling between the two countries since the two countries are members of BRICS. I think we need to look at that because it's an extension in terms of none. Or I think they should be exempted from applying for visa if they go there with an ordinary passport. That's my understanding of that.
Okay.
Yeah, so they shouldn't acquire visitors' visa. But again, we need to look at that and check as to the kind of treatment we got, despite the agreement, despite the fact that we were using the official passport. And I wonder what would happen on an ordinary passport. You know, I think we need to, the other thing, the research must be broadened further and check all those points in terms of what would be the effect. Because as we take decisions, we must know what to expect after we have done such in all the cases. Thank you.
I'm not sure if we need to include the issue of employers who employ foreign nations, let me say illegal foreigners. Did we capture that one? Because they are paying $20,000 for employing a foreigner who is illegal. So those are our findings from our Russian trips. And also the way, even in Dubai, the way the immigration officials are handling foreigners there, people do their work accordingly. Mm-hmm. And here in our own country, if we do that, then we think we are too harsh to our visitors. But I mean, that's what should happen. We should know who is coming, who is going out of our country. You know, when we left that country, we had at another point had to take off the shoes and the coats and everything to go through that the scanner, so that they are sure that you are not taking anything out of their country. So those are some of the things that we've learned. Members, I'm sure we are in agreement that the document has to be worked on, and then we will look at it in our next meeting. Okay.
Is there anything that is mentioned here? Sorry to just take over like that. The issue that is highlighted here in terms of higher education engagement, where the exchange of programs. Maybe look it in our, we need not refer it to education only. We must also look at what we are doing here at Thomas and see, do we have a means of something that we can, maybe that is good in Russia, where we can then identify our own, we can then go there for an exchange program. The way it's phrased here, it's sort of saying the Department of Education, of Higher Education, must be the only one that is following up on this thing. But I think we also need to use that particular advantage. They even mentioned something in terms of doing what the Cubans are doing, in terms of young, I mean, school leavers. To say they have, they do accommodate them in a even for paying their fees and what they do. The only thing is that they have to spend a year learning their language. So that might delay them. But those who are prepared to do that, they can go there. And that is another area that we need to look at. That's the Department of Work. Thank you.
Okay, sure. What I'll do is, just in terms of the Russian report, I'll implement all the changes and then give it to members by Friday. Obviously, it's not for me to decide what the recommendations are, so I'll, based on what the members have said, I'll make a few of the recommendations and then you can add or subtract if I've left anything out. The members could just email me once I've sent out the link, the refined report, if they want additional recommendations or take some of them away. I'd appreciate that. Okay. Okay, so next we're going to go into the private members' petition, the proposal by Honourable Lovemore. I'm just going to briefly go into the procedure that one follows in terms of petitions. They're a constitutional.
I'll explain about the document.
one slide, and then to the rules of the National Assembly in terms of how we need to deal with the petition. So if you go to slide 3, which will be the fourth page, basically this says where in the rules of Parliament the procedures for following for dealing with petitions are.
Just a point of clarity. We're not dealing with a petition. We're dealing with a legislative proposal, and I mean there's a whole set of rules dealing with that. I mean, petitions are, as I understand, quite different from this proposal relating to the amendment to the electoral law. I don't know that it is a petition. So I think we could just clarify that, please, Manager. Goes into the procedures because the page four, it says
vetting that not only be limited to vetting facilities being located at South African embassies, consulates and high commissions, and that there also need to be provision made for those persons living abroad to be able to register for those respective elections. The procedures require that also it stated what the financial implications would be, and the issue basically saying that the extent of the cost will depend on what system is decided, but that there will probably be considerable financial implications. I've then done a quick view of the possible parts of the Electoral Act and regulations that would be impacted on. I'm not going to go into detail. This is for your notes and for your deliberations. The first is Section 7 of the Electoral Act, which I'll quickly go to now. So there are about six parts of the Electoral Act that will be impacted on. But if I can actually cut it short, if we go to Section 33 of the Electoral Act, there's actually a way that we could implement these changes without necessarily having to amend the legislation. We could do it purely in terms of the regulations. If one goes to Section 33, which deals with special votes, there is a provision under Section 33A, which basically says, let me just read the... That's what currently applies. It's only applied to persons working in government employ who are abroad at the time of elections.
Thank you.
because I'm not sure whether how to deal with this matter now, because this is the first time we're dealing with this,
yeah,
this kind of a private member's legislative proposal. Whether should we, as the parties, go and discuss it and come up with a proposal in our next meeting as to what it is that we think should happen with the piece of legislation. Are we supposed to send our proposal to this private member committee or what is happening? Can we please take it?
Yeah, at this stage, they referred to the committees that they thought might have an impact. So our committee and then the select committee on public service, public services. So both committees are considering it, and they'll come up with recommendations. I've tried to find out what the timelines are, but at this stage, I think Eddie's got an indication.
Okay. What happened? They sent this on the 17th of May, and then they wanted just the committee to comment by the 22nd. But the Honorable Gam, the acting chair, wrote a letter to the committee to say, no, we need enough time to engage on it. So that's why we scheduled this meeting today. So it means if we. If we postpone, we have to write them a letter again to say, no, we will be in the order.
What's
the following? We wrote to them to indicate to them that we will put this matter on our agenda for today. We didn't say, you know, that we will definitely come up with a final position. We're not in a position to, as a committee, come up now with a position on this matter. So, what I propose is that parties take this matter back to their caucus, wherever they want to take it, study groups, and that by next week we're going to vote there's an end. So that's also the problematic that I think by a future date in 2 weeks' time, whatever, that we then go back to this committee. That is, there's no other way.
Chairperson, obviously, my position would have been different given the fact that not only Honorable Latmo, but my caucus is privy to the discussion that is currently on the table. But I think I take the position that the committee members in general have not had an opportunity to engage nor read thoroughly the matter that is before us. So it then takes us to the fact that it's possibly to defer to the next meeting, and then hopefully by then we'll be able to make a position, take a position. Thank you, sir.
Honorable
Martin Hush,
Honorable
Kiki,
will be there. Or Kiki before Honorable Martin.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I agree with the proposal that was put forward because this is a political matter and it needs a political agreement. You cannot just as the committee take a decision on the matter that needs amendment to the Constitution. And as we are sitting right now here, we did not even look at the Constitution and what implications could be there thereafter. So I agree that let us postpone the matter.
Madam Chair, I think the principles are quite clear and constitutionally. Every South African citizen has the right to vote. And that the Constitutional Court has said. The real issue is the mechanisms to enable them to vote. Now, voting overseas is cumbersome, it's expensive, and in some cases very few people actually end up voting. So to me as a committee, if we are democratic, we cannot object to the principle of South Africans many countries in the world, not all, but many countries in the world provide a service. With modern communications, electronic voting, etc., etc., it's just becoming easier. And the reality is that in the Emirates, for example, I don't know, there are 50, 60,000 South Africans working in the Emirates. I think they'd probably like to vote. And I think it can be made much easier with our electronic systems. So I do agree that we should refer it back, but I don't think there should be a long delay, because basically what can we do really, Madam Chair? Well, we're not technical experts. I think the Electoral Commission must come with a proposal and say, look, we can't do it. It's too much, it's too big, it's too expensive. Or they must say, no, sure we can do it, but it will cost extra, and it's perfectly feasible. Then they must tell us how we do it. And it's quite clear that that there's enough skills around, including Honourable Lovemore's, to make some constructive suggestions, and then we can try to look at that proposal. But I do agree that we although we could in principle support it, I think we possibly need to just take a little bit longer. But no, I don't think we must avoid it, because people must. The principle is all South Africans must be given the opportunity to vote within the context of practicalities and so on and so on. I mean, that's why we extend voting hours sometimes if there are long queues, and we've got to be flexible.
No, no, all I have comments that the South Africans, we have the right to vote, but we need to consider other issues as well. Honourable Foster?
So I think we concluded by saying we will look at the matter and come back to the community. I think we need to close with that.
I just want to make another proposal. As that one, I mean, that one stands, but then on top of that, of it, I think maybe we should consider, Jay, writing a letter to the Electoral Commission and to ask for their comments in terms of whether this is, you know, possible. How do they understand, do they also understand that judgment that has been made by, I think it was the Constitutional Court, or whatever it was, and so on. That number one. To do that as a matter of urgency, so that we can get the comments. And secondly, Jay, if we could perhaps just, if the committee section can just make sure that, you know, as a matter of urgency as well, we get a copy of that judgment, please, to all the members.
Yeah, I think we need to get the judgment. Was it the 2-2-1? Yeah, to look at that, because if I remember well, after that the judgment, you know, we wanted to get a report from the IEC as to the cost with regard to that, and it was so difficult for them to come up with a cost, because people whom were expected to vote did not vote, and the IEC spent a hell of money with regard to that. So we will look at or weigh all the options. I'm not sure, but we will write a letter to the IEC, I think, to for them to comment whether they will include this in their amendment to the Act, and whether it could be covered by the regulations. They will see as to how well they will handle it. And then we also need to go and look at the studies as to what proposal will we come up with as a committee and refer to the private members committee. On that note, the matter has been deferred to our political parties, and the matter will be discussed in our next meeting. We are all in agreement. Thank you, Honourable Members. We are about to. Are we going to discuss the case at entry? Oh, okay. There is a case at an oversight trip, and the support staff are still working on that. Members will be informed.
members that there are two regulations, draft regulations that have been tabled, one on the Citizenship Act and one on the Birth and Death Registration Act. So we as Parliament are not required to look at it, but if members are interested and wish to make recommendations, there's two more days. We have until 31st to make any recommendations on those pieces of legislation. So I can forward, if any members are interested in that, I can forward them the regulations on those, and they can make recommendations if they wish. Mm-hmm. We have 2 days for that.
Just legislation or regulation?
Regulation.
It's regulations, and my understanding is that that's the departmental or ministry.
Yeah, you don't have to be
private
members.
Yes,
or
I don't know.
Please
don't confuse us. Honourable McIntosh.
Madam Chair, my concern with this thing, and I'm speaking now as an oversight, and I'm talking to ourselves as members of Parliament, regardless of our parties. One of our functions is to have oversight of the executive. Now, a risk to us as parliamentarians is that ministers make regulations and they avoid accountability and oversight. And I don't know what the procedure is, and maybe our staff can tell us, but regulations cannot happen except in terms of an act. And it's very necessary that an act empowers a minister or his department or her department to make regulations, because otherwise bills become impossible. But I do, and I know regulations must be consistent with an act of Parliament. And no civil servant can do anything if he's any good, unless in terms of an act or in terms of regulations. But I think we must just be alert and wide awake that we know what these regulations are, and that we're at least aware of them, even if we're not necessarily involved in having to approve them, because the minister is given powers by us to make regulations. But I think it's very important that we just are conscious of that, Madam Chair. Thank you.
So listen, I take the point, and in fact, to qualify the comments made by Honourable McIntosh, is that during the deliberations with the department, we made some serious suggestions on amendments, and most of which were then suggested that, no, don't worry, we'll correct this at the recommendation when we make the regulations and bring them back. So, you know, in COSA there is something called umgeti. And when you go to umgeti, you would bring some form of a gift. Because you bring that in the form of ugukita, hoping that when your own son is also going to the initiation school, the person that you have given the present to in good faith will do the same to you. So when we give this to the department, we were hoping that they will do this thing in good faith and come here and give us the benefit and the kind of respect that we did to them when we said, yes, you can do that when you come back. And now what we're hearing is all of these are happening through the other medium of communication, other than what they did before when they came to us. For instance, they made references on the citizenship one, the regulations, made references to the Birth and Death Registration Amendment Act and to the many other laws that exist. For instance, the Mercenaries Act and so forth. And if you read the regulations and then you compare that to the act that we are proposing, some of the sections that we are proposing, it then says to us it would have been better if they had come here and explained this, that this is how this thing is going to be. Because they put so many annexures and forms that apply in different circumstances on your citizenship, whether you rescind or you get back your citizenship or whatever the situation may be. So I would have hoped that they were going to do that. In fact, in this case, they did not. So each member has to sit down on his own or her own time and do this thing. And we know that the limited time, most members, if
oversight. We are doing oversight, so we are still free to call them and to come and tell us why we pick up in the regulations this and that and the other thing, and you know, come and account to us. So we also we always have that kind of option. But thirdly, there's a very interesting new development called the Interim Joint Committee on the Scrutiny of Delegated Legislation. Sins of serving on this weird new committee. And this committee is going to scrutinize all regulations. So I hope that our dear beloved department knows that their regulations will have to come to that committee. But anyway, it's a new thing. And will scrutinize all regulations, will then also liaise with the relevant portfolio committee pertaining to that matter. But this committee will only scrutinize the legislation more from a legal perspective, whether the point that Honourable McIntosh made, whether the regulations are consistent with the provision, the provision that authorized the making of regulations in the first place and so on, whilst the committee will more look at the policy-related matters. So I'm just making mention of this thing, and it even goes further that to say that if regulatory authority is created in terms of legislation, for example, you say the minister might make regulation to do this, that, and the other thing, then that provision authorizing the making of regulations, then that must also go to this scrutiny of delegated legislation. How this is going to work and so on, it's going to be quite difficult, but other parliaments of the world apparently also have these kind of committees. It's a very interesting new development, and maybe will, and that's my third point, you know, will add some or provide some comfort to the Honourable Council.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you. Honourable Member, we are legend. We cannot do and implement at the same time. We make legislation, the department will implement and monitor, yes, oversight, but the implementers are the department. On that note, our members, I would like to thank you on this call to us on the table. And the meeting is adjourned.
Who's only looking for a little